Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh!
Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we isolate that clip? Nia Jackson weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big football show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. We are glad to have you back here on the program. Before we start, I just want to make sure that the levels are working, so I'm going to get Ron on just... out of position, just to make sure that this is, that he can hear me. Ron, just really quick before I get you on officially, can you hear me?
Hey, oh. Dave, it's really low.
Really, really low. Okay.
Yeah, you sound far away.
Oh, I do. Okay. Then I have to figure that one out. That's been, okay. I'll work on that. But meanwhile, let me just get back to my open. Do I have everybody? Okay, so I have two out of three people on the air. We'll bring everybody on officially in just a moment, but I have a lot of setup. First of all, thank you very much for your support of the program, even though we haven't been on in quite a while. Like, we were last on in about the 22nd of October, right before the... Was it before the postseason even? Like, it's been a very long time, so we haven't been on the... No, the last show we did, I think, was about the time that the World Series started. And we did the NBA preview with Chris in Georgia. And we did do a pretty good preview. And we weren't quite as... We were a little more comprehensive this time with this program. But that was it. That was the last show we did for quite a while. So I have a lot of thanks to give. Number one, thanks to the Washington Nationals for winning the World Series. That was quite a wacky, crazy World Series. And it worked out very well. For DC, it's pretty nuts. The road team won every game in the World Series, which is a first in baseball history. It's actually a first in the entirety of sports, and just incredible job. I won't add too much to that right now. But whenever we get around to doing another baseball show, it's actually going to be a little longer than I thought. We'll get into that in more detail. But a tremendous job by the Nationals, and a tremendous finish to the World Series. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say it was one of the best World Series ever, but it's definitely one of my favorites. It's just such a crazy series that was. A lot of twists and turns and things you didn't expect along the way. So we hope you enjoyed it as well. Let's give some thanks to our guest pickers from the last few weeks. In Week 8, we thank Stason SoCal and Tommy New Jersey for their picks. In Week 9, we thank Dave in Queens. And from Week 10, we thank our friend John in Orlando. We all call him Yachts. And we'll tell you how he did in just a moment. The others, go to ditcow.com and you can find out what happened over there within Weeks 8 and 9. So definitely a lot of recap to be had, but it's all there on ditcow.com for you. So this is a big week in football. We are... excited to have the entire panel with us tonight. Guest picks will be, if he's able to call in, from Robert in Virginia. I don't know if he is going to call in, but I provided the number just in case. So I'll be on the lookout for his phone call. But I think we will have the picks either way on the website. Couple of notes before we start. Willie Taggart was terminated by Florida State. And as of the second, USC hired a new athletic director by the name of Mike Bone is the former athletic director at Cincinnati, and the idea was that he was getting hired, but we are getting news that USC president Carol Folt told him after hiring him that they had no intention of getting Urban Meyer. And on reading this report today, my head has just been spinning, like, the rest of the day. Because it's like, well, like, I can understand if you didn't want to go after Urban Meyer to an extent. But when you hire a new AD, the whole idea is that you're going to get after the best available coach. And I think it's a consensus by a lot of people, including the folks on this program, that the best available coach is Urban Meyer. And we know that he's got associated with some really bad stuff, you know, some really heinous compliance with what some of his associates, with some of his assistant coaches had been up to. No doubt about it. But I think with all that said, everybody was in agreement that despite all that, I'm not necessarily excusing it, but since it didn't involve him directly, I think people were willing to go with Urban Meyer despite all the seediness that goes with it. So it is a very baffling moment for the USC football fan right now, because it's like, well, why did you hire the AD? Why did you rush out to get an AD for then? If you never had the intention of getting Urban Meyer, usually when one makes a move like that, it's with the intent of going after the big name coach, and the USC football boosters and the fans and everybody must be just in such a strange place right now. And I am no different. I just think it's just crazy. And more importantly than that, if that was really the intent, why didn't you bring this to the attention of the prospective ADs during the interview process? Why are we doing this now? Just such a mess. Well, I don't want this to bring down the mood of the show, because we got some great football coming up this week, and it's all on the table. The first college football rankings were released, and the little furor about Clemson being left out of the top four, but it is early in the process. This is the first CFP rankings of the year. In the fourth slot is Penn State. They're going to play Minnesota on Saturday afternoon. And then later in the afternoon, we're looking at LSU Alabama, a game that everybody's been looking forward to the entire year. It's just going to be a big day in football. And it's actually a big day in the NFL as well. You've got a bunch of key divisional matchups. You've got Chargers Raiders on Thursday night. Then you have the Seahawks against the 49ers. And in addition to that, you've got some other interesting interesting battles. One of them was an intra-conference battle between the Rams and the Steelers. You've got Vikings in Dallas, and then you've got the Panthers and the Packers. It is a really, really exciting moment. And what's more, we've got some excitement heating up in the standings as we get down to what I think is the biggest weekend of the football year so far. Let's hit it! Football picks week 11. So when we last left you, you know, Ronnie, New Jersey, I believe, was in third place, maybe second place in the contest. Well, today he is standing high at the top at first. He went 3-0-1 last week. He went 4-0 the week before. He went 4-0 the week before that. And altogether, he has climbed quite a bit in the standings, surging ahead in the first place amongst all of the regulars. In second place for week number 10, it was John in Connecticut at 2-1-1. Third place, Andy in Seattle at 1-2-1. Andy had a couple pretty good weeks before that, though. And I, Dave in the City, have had no good weeks. I've actually been 0 for the last 6 in college picks. Just absolutely brutal. Last week altogether, 1-3. So just a tough week. Guest picks from John in Orlando went 2-2. Sorry about the mishap with the Illinois pick. I don't know how to count. I counted it as a loss. It actually was a win. So overall, he went 2-2. And that is a correct number. So after 10 weeks, these are our standings. It is Ron way at the top at 26-10-2. We hope he keeps it continue. Andy's in second place at 19-14-5. John's in third at 17-19-2. And Dave, I am in last place at 15-21-2. Guest picks are 18-19-1. And we move on into this home stretch of this season. The last month of college. But then we've got another month on top of that for the NFL, so still a lot to come for sure. Even though we're on the back end of the schedule, still a lot to talk about and still a lot to preview as we get into the meat of this. So let's bring in our panel, and I do want to ask as we get everybody on whether they can hear me correctly. So we'll start with Ron in New Jersey, and congrats, Ron. How are the levels? Am I sounding okay? How's it going tonight?
Yeah, Dave, you actually sound perfect now. Thanks for having me on a bit of a roll. So let's try to keep it going.
Yeah, I love it. All right, let's do that. I'm just worried. Now I'm worried about mushing it. I don't want to mush it. But other than that, all right. So let's also bring in John to the program. John, how's it going? Welcome back. Good to have you.
Hey, Dave, Ron, hopefully Andy, doing well, and I can hear you fine. Good to be back.
All right, very good. And Andy, welcome back as well. How's it going tonight?
Oh, it feels like it's been a long time to talk, but yeah, good to be on board. Hey, I'm trying to figure out here. Tommy mentioned that you had a you made a parlay bet yesterday, but it was you bet one bone to win 19. What site do you use where you can actually bet $1? Because I think five dimes like just $5 or $10. But unless you have FanDuel, do they let you do that?
Well, I can't do FanDuel because it's not authorized in California yet for that. It is. I'm doing Bovada. Bovada actually lets you do. They let you do 50-cent bets. It's kind of funny.
Oh my goodness gracious!
I know. Small.
Dave, the parlay win. That's the more important question. Did you get the 19 bones?
Not even close. I missed 4 out of the 5.
Oh jeez.
Par for the course. So, anyway, let's get into the meat of the recap from last week's college action. And you know, it was so much going on behind the scenes. I forgot all the stuff that happened in the actual field. But let's go to Ron and get a recap of last week's college action. I'm trying to remember what happened. Okay, so Georgia and Florida, Georgia won. SMU and Memphis scored a billion points. That's as much as I can. Oh yeah, and Oregon trashed USC. I can't wait for Clayton to go. But anyway, Ron, let's get your recap from last week.
Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, that pretty much sums it up, what you just said, huh?
Yep.
You know, you had Georgia, Florida, which I guess was the big game, you know, last week. And as expected, Georgia, you know, pulled it out. Florida, again, they're good. They're not great. Yeah, I was surprised to see them actually rank so high in the initial rankings, but whatever. I mean, they had their chances in that game, and they just the offense just couldn't convert. And then, of course, you had Game Day at Memphis and SMU, which was a cool little different setting. They put it on in prime time on ABC. It actually turned out to be a really fun game. But, I mean, anybody who's watched the AAC for the past, you know, 5 years knew that a game like that was going to happen where, you know, it's basically, you know, a shootout. You know, whoever had the ball last won. Memphis pulled away a little bit late, and SMU couldn't catch up. But it was still an entertaining game. Like you said, Oregon trashed USC. Utah hung out against Washington in a pretty good game to set up really a battle of the one-loss Pac-12 teams between Utah and Oregon to see who has a pretty good outside shot to make the college football playoffs if everything breaks right. So, yeah, I mean, that was the overall week. But like you said, there was a lot of stuff going on outside of the games, namely Willie Taggart getting fired, which came as a surprise to me. I mean, I know I guess the one thing you could say about that is Florida State really hasn't been on anybody's radar for the past 2 years. And that's probably the biggest indictment against Taggart, because they went from basically a national title winner to, you know, on the level of a Syracuse or a Duke or an NC State in the matter of, you know, 3 or 4 years. And Taggart definitely wasn't getting the most out of that team. So I guess they go in another direction now. And the first thing that popped into my head when I saw he was fired, when I was actually watching the SMU-Memphis game, and I thought Norville from Memphis would be a perfect fit for somewhere like Florida State. But then you hear the names that they're talking about now, and it's Stoops at Kentucky, and you know, maybe they'll try to make a run at Matt Campbell. Florida State just you know, they don't do things. You know, they don't make the right decisions lately. Is what I think is going on. And you know, they made a rush decision to hire Taggart, and that didn't work out. And, you know, if they hire somebody like Stoops, I mean, you're just going to get mediocrity for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years. But, you know, that's their prerogative, and we'll see how it goes.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, they really did rush into that, and there was no real reason to. It was kind of funny. Like, they really wanted to go after the latest flavor of ice cream, and they went with Taggart, and it was clear that Taggart was way in over his head. You could see it in his face, so... It's definitely a learning moment for the administration too, and for Taggart for that matter. Okay, let's go to John. Let's get your recap.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it when Taggart was first hired. It was just really surprising, the fact that he even got the Oregon job. I mean, he had some moderate success at South Florida, but it wasn't like he was, you know, blowing away the competition there. He had one really great season with Quentin Flowers as his quarterback, and after that it really just hasn't really done much of anything. And even though he was fired, I was just kind of surprised that it happened so quickly. I mean, you know, obviously one of the boosters wrote a check for his buyout. I'm assuming it was, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 million or something like that. So definitely an interesting scenario. I thought he was at least going to finish up the season, but they must have someone in mind. But you know, you heard the rumors of Bob Stoops, but I don't think that's happening. He's going to be coaching, I guess, in the XFL next year, but he said he's not interested. And honestly, who would want to go into that kind of train wreck of a program right now at the moment? You kind of need some kind of young and up-and-coming coach. P.J. Fleck would be a good choice, honestly, but Minnesota just locked him up for another 7 or 8 years, so good job by them. But yeah, that's just a tough situation for Florida State football right now, and I'm pretty surprised that he at least didn't finish off the year. I mean, he didn't even coach, what, 18 games at Florida State, and yeah, he was clearly over his head, but that's just very surprising to make this move so quickly. And unless they have a big fish in mind, I kind of don't get the timing. But alas, we digress to this past weekend, and yeah, the SMU Memphis game, that was a lot of fun. The AAC with another nationally televised game, and it, you know, it showed you the depth of the conference. I mean, they have 5 teams either in the top 25 or right outside the top 25. I believe UCF is right outside the top 25 at the moment. So it's a really good football league. And, you know, hopefully the winner of the conference will get the group of 5 slot to the Cotton Bowl this year. That's kind of what it's looking like. Although I am a little bitter. I did bet Memphis -3 early in the week, so I did get that cover. But for a pool scenario, man, I had the -6, and I was counting my win up 54 to 32 with like 8 minutes left. Even when it was 54-40 with, you know, a minute left, I'm like, all right, whatever. They're just going to score, get their extra point, and 6.5 is still good. But now there's this new fabled idea. I guess it's analytic driven, beep boop kind of thing, where these teams are going for 2. To get within 6 points when they're down 14 late in the game. And it's probably the right play when you look at it analytically, like the percentage of chance of winning the game doing that versus kicking the extra point. But now you just have another sweat for gamblers if you're betting 6 or 6.5 in these games up 14. And of course SMU gets the 2-point conversion, and that all went to hell. But yeah, so that was pretty interesting. And so other games in the week, yeah, Dave, very disappointed in USC. They came out like a house on fire, and then just completely fell apart as the game went on. So very disappointing. I thought they would have given a little better effort than that. And now it sets up a collision course with them and Oregon and Utah in the Pac-12 title game. Utah dispatches of Washington, another game that Washington blew on their home field, and their season's essentially over at this point. And Utah, very impressive. I think they're the better team than Oregon, and I think they'd be more competitive for a potential, you know, in a playoff game. As I would trust Whittingham more, matching wits with some of these other coaches as opposed to Cristobal. We've seen him before not exactly rise to the occasion in a big game. So hoping for that Oregon-Utah Pac-12 title game. We hope those teams keep winning, and maybe the Pac-12 will have a representative in the playoff this year. Yeah, Georgia-Florida, really not much to discuss. Georgia did what they had to do, got a lead, and Florida kind of made it a little closer than what the game actually was. Georgia dominated that game pretty much the entire game, ended up winning by 7. Yeah, so that's pretty much it for the weekend. Really, really not much to discuss, but that SMU-Memphis game was definitely fun to watch on Saturday night.
Yeah, I was watching that one too. I mean, definitely after the after halftime, I was watching it because maybe mid-third quarter that USC game got away. So it's like, well, no reason to watch this anymore. So I was just watching. I was only flipping back to it like during commercial of the other game. And already did the SMU game. So I do have to give SMU some credit for hanging around because I did think that after that little flurry by Memphis that it was going to be that. But SMU put in, I guess you could call it lip service or window dressing, but they did start to cut into that lead. And depending on when you took the pick. Now, we on the podcast had it at, what was it? We had like 5.5, I think. So that covered, but if you took it later in the day, in the weekend, it was like 6.5, and so that would not have covered. So that one really was all over the place. That was kind of interesting. So, Andy, let's get your recap of last week.
Yeah, you guys nailed it pretty good. I watched the entire Florida-Georgia game. It's one of those games I like to carve out 3.5 hours and watch. And yeah, John was right. It was Georgia basically statistically dominated the game. Florida got stopped on a fourth down early in the game. They just couldn't really move the ball as easy as Georgia could. Georgia kind of from 20 to 20 had their way. Florida made it like a 6 or 7 point game like late in the third quarter, and then next thing you know, Georgia went up 14 again. But Florida just lacked the offensive firepower that day. But they're 7-2. They'll probably end up in a BCS bowl, like a New Year's Day bowl. I mean, last year they were 9-3, and they got to play Michigan in a New Year's Day game, and a lot of the Pac-12 mongos out here got, they're still sensitive about it. But, the Florida Hillbillies gonna go to those games, and, the Washington hoity-toity person isn't gonna travel, so that's why they go. Willie Taggart, yeah, Florida State, I think they're just kind of living on, ghost and borrowed reputation, kind of like how Tennessee, when Tennessee conducts their coaching search scenario, they think they're going to get, the next best thing to slice bread. But Tennessee isn't, I'm sorry, Nick Saban isn't going to Tennessee, the next up-and-comer isn't going to drop everything he's doing and go to Tennessee. So, maybe Florida State was, if Jimbo could do it over again, maybe he'd stay at Florida State. If Florida State could do it over again, maybe they try to keep Jimbo, because ever since they left each other, they haven't really duplicated the success. But, yeah, the SMU Memphis game was entertaining. Good to see Big Herb Street and Fowler do a game that's outside the Big Ten and the ACC. They need to kind of expand their portfolio on that ABC primetime game. But, I had 6 in real life, 5.5 in the podcast. So about that whole analytic thing, I don't get it either, but I read somewhere that it's like – hybrid of a beep boop and a human situation, because they think that by going for the 2-point conversion and making it a 6-point game rather than a 7-point game, it applies extra pressure on the hands recovery team to actually recover the onside kick. But again, I mean, are you analytic or are you human? You can't be both. Sorry, Fiddle, but that's just the way it is. So we'll see if that trend actually sticks, but I don't know. Why try and invent the wheel? The one thing I do like about analytics in football is it does create more coaches going for it on fourth down, like, between the 50 and the 40-yard line, unless you're David Shaw. But that's the one thing of analytics that I like. Oregon, Utah – Utah, it's funny. Utah, if they didn't stub their toe against USC in late September, then they'd have a lot more cachet. And I'm not even a big Utah fan, but You know, if Oregon didn't stub their toe against Auburn, you know, there'd be a lot more traction for the Pac-12. But unfortunately, that's all in the past now. And you're going to need some real shaking up, I believe, for the Pac-12 to get serious contention to get in that playoff game. Yeah, John mentioned Washington. Like, you know, everyone says, oh, Peterson, you know, when Peterson teams go up more than two possessions, they don't, well, what do they do against Oregon? They just gagged it late. They're just a bully team. You know, I can't stand the Peterson program this year, and they might lose to Corvallis this year. It's a big game for some reason. Oregon State's actually playing well this year. That's a Friday night game, so I might actually take Oregon State getting 10 in a little bit, but we'll have to think it over. But yeah, it was an entertaining week. You know, there's some late night games that were fun from a degenerate standpoint, but you know, it was fun. You guys nailed it. And moving on to November 9th.
Yeah, and it yields an interesting weekend of action for sure. It is Veterans Day weekend as well. So let's get to the picks. The LSU and Alabama is the big game of the week, no doubt. Penn State, Minnesota is the other big game in college. So we'll go back to Ron and give it to you for the picks, Ron. Good luck, and on we go. I'll give it to you now.
Yeah, all right, thanks, Dave. My first pick, I am going to go with Notre Dame, -8 on the road against Duke. To me, that line jumps out. It's a little too tight. You know, Duke is not a good team this year. They've lost two in a row, both on the road, I know. But still, you know, I know David Cutcliffe is the quarterback whisperer and whatnot. And he always gets Duke to play hard. And Notre Dame's coming off a last-minute win against a bad Virginia Tech team last week, and I think that kept the line down a little bit. But I think, you know, you got the Notre Dame fans, that, you know, the guys who wear the, as Mike would say, the footy pajamas. They're probably Cowboy fans, too. excuse me. You know who they are. But so... I think they still have dreams of making the college football playoff. If I could go back a couple years, our friend ACQ, I think Notre Dame had something like 3 losses, and he was still trying to come up with ways that they could make the college football playoff in late November. So, you know, I think the program, you know, thinks the same way as the fans. They probably think they have an outside shot. I think they'll be playing hard. So I'll take Notre Dame -8 against Duke on the road. And my second game, I'm going to go BYU -17 at home against Liberty. I know BYU is not the old school run up the score BYU, but at home against a Liberty team that got blown out by Rutgers, 17 to me is a light number there. I know Liberty's got 6 wins this year, but you look who their wins are against. 2 against New Mexico State. UMass is in there. Probably, you know, no offense to John, but probably Connecticut. I don't know if they played them, but if they did, they probably won. You know, just a bunch of no names that they, and bad teams that they played, you know, to get to their 6 wins. But they're not a good football team. BYU's, you know, not as good as they once were. But 17 at home, after, you know, you lost to Rutgers by 20 something. I'll take BYU -17. So those are my picks this week.
All right, thank you, Ron. Thank you very much. And now let's go to John, and let's get your Week 11 picks.
All right, Dave. Actually, the highly anticipated Liberty-UConn game will be next year. So I'm definitely looking forward to that one as UConn hits Independence. But, for this week, we'll start off with one of the bigger games, and I'll take Minnesota getting the touchdown at home against Penn State. This almost feels like one of those like popular like underdog picks, and that's usually never a good thing. But I just really like the way this Minnesota team has been playing lately. They were kind of shaky to start off the season. I mean, they barely scraped by against Fresno State and Georgia Southern, and I believe their FCS team they played, they barely beat too, but they've really been playing great football lately and buying into flex system. They got two great receivers, and Bateman and Johnson. Their running game, they rush for like over 200 yards a game. Their offensive line's been really opening up holes. So I just really like the way this team's been playing. And I think Penn State's just a little overvalued. They've been outgained in a lot of their games, had some turnover luck. They easily, you know, could have lost one of these games if the ball bounces a different way. And obviously it didn't. They're undefeated and, you know, ranked fourth in the country. But I just think they're a little overvalued. And I think this just will be a really close game. This is the biggest game for Minnesota in years. So I will happily take the 7 points at home. So Minnesota plus 7 for game one. And then game two, we will go to the very last game of the night. I will be firing up a Facebook live stream to try to watch this one at 11 o'clock. San Jose State getting 7.5 at Hawaii. This line, I could be completely wrong. It just doesn't make sense to me. San Jose State is actually having a pretty good season for their standards. I believe they were like 2-10 or something last year, and they've really turned it around this year. They've had 4 wins. They came on the road and beat Army a couple of weeks ago, and had the lead against Boise in the fourth quarter last week. So they're a much improved team with a great offense, and Hawaii's defense is pathetic. Both teams' defenses actually are pretty pathetic. So I think this is the type of game where there's going to be a lot of points scored, and the team with the ball last is going to win. So in that scenario, we will take 7.5 all day long. I know Hawaii's been kind of shuffling their quarterbacks in and out with McDonald and Cordero. So, I just feel like this is just going to be one of those up-and-down, crazy scoring games. And getting 7.5, I will take that all day long. So give me San Jose State plus 7.5 and Minnesota plus 7 for the two picks for this weekend.
Okay, thank you very much, John. Let's now segue then to Andy in Seattle and get your Week 11 picks.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Yeah, I love all these picks so far, so hope I don't mush it by piggybacking. But game number one, I'm going to take Temple on the road against South Florida. Temple's giving 1.5 in this game. And it's tomorrow night, so we're going to get a head start, hopefully, on the action. This is basically just an anti-Charlie Strong pick. Temple's hard to figure out. Last month, they beat Memphis, and then after that, all they've done is lose badly. They lost badly against Central Florida. I think they were up like 21-10 in that game, and they ended up losing like 63-21, so... And then they lost to SMU as well. So they're not really trending in the right direction, but this is an anti-Charlie Strong pick. That's it. So give me Temple giving 1.5 on the road at South Florida. And then game number two, you know what? I'm gonna stick to my guns. I'm going to take Oregon State hosting a very underwhelming Washington Husky squad this year. This is a Friday night game. 7:30 West Coast time on FS1, and you're getting 10 here with the Beavers. They're trending in the right direction. I know they haven't really, you know, they beat Arizona and they beat Cal. They're pretty good against the spread. It looks like they're 6-2. This could be a game where Washington like puts it together and they front run and they batter and bully their way to a win. But I'm just feeling this Oregon State mojo. And yeah, if you've heard this podcast, if you've heard me ramble, if you've seen my mouth breathing box filled tweets, I am not a University of Washington fan this year. Their fans are hard to take. Everything about the Northwest right now is a little tough to take from a college football standpoint. So I'm pretty subjective here. I just they think Jacob Eason's going to be like this pro prospect. Enough. You can't even win your home games. Their home schedule this year was basically handed to them on a platter. USC at home, Utah at home, Oregon at home, Washington State at home. And they beat USC. USC actually, they're playing with their third string quarterback, but I you get the idea. This, I can see 10 years from now a bunch of UW honks be like, oh my God, what a season of disappointment of those 2019 University of Washington Huskies. Like, this was national championship talent. Yeah, they're going to end up like 7-5. So yeah, give me Oregon State getting the 10, anti-Peterson, anti-UW, and we're going to go anti-Charlie Strong. We're going to take Temple tomorrow night, giving 1.5 at South Florida. And yeah, we gotta try to stay on pace with Ron here. So let's go.
All right. Thank you very much for the picks, Andy. And everyone, good luck to your selections for week number 11. Two more to go. I'll go with mine first. Here we go. Let's get to it. All right, game number one. We're going to mirror John's pick. I had this written down as the same way. Minnesota +7 against Penn State. He nailed it pretty perfectly. I have nothing to add on that. So we'll go to game two, and we'll go for the biggie. LSU against Alabama at Tuscaloosa. I'm going to go with the Tigers getting 6 on the road. They have not won in Tuscaloosa since 2011, and Andy can verify or deny that or correct me if I'm wrong about that. But it's been a while, and I figure if there's going to be a year for it, this would be the year. I do have to check and see if Tua is going to start. Even if he does start, he's probably going to be at maybe less than 100%, probably like 80%, 75%. So I think the door is open for LSU. But to be honest, I could see this game going either way because what do they always say? Like, a good defense beats a good offense. So I wouldn't be surprised if Alabama won in a route either. But I figure my instinct says LSU to win. But if they cover and win and lose by 4, that's fine too. So LSU +6 to go with Minnesota +7 for week number 11. Robert in Virginia has the guest picks, but those will be posted tomorrow. So we will get that on didcow.com. Look for it there. And then we'll let you know how he did on the next program when we do football picks. So meanwhile, let's preview some of these games. LSU-Bama is the biggest one of them all. And Penn State-Minnesota, we covered that in good detail as well. Couple other interesting ones to look at. Baylor-TCU, that has sneaky good potential because I feel like TCU is a live dog. And then there are other games we can talk about too. So let's go to Ron first. And anything you wanted to talk about as far as this coming weekend in college?
Yeah, I mean, the two big games are Bama-LSU and Minnesota-Penn State. And, you know, I'll be rooting hard for Minnesota to beat Penn State. I mean, I can't stand Penn State. And, you know, they've looked pretty good this year. You know, they've had a couple tough games. But, geez, I would love it if Minnesota, you know, beat them at home. You kind of expect it to be a primetime game on ABC, but Fox has it at 12 o'clock. So it'll give us a reason to watch in the afternoon. And, you know, just going back to Minnesota, I remember on the preview show that we did before the season, John had mentioned, you know, Minnesota is one of his picks, and the quarterback, Anikstad, I think was his name, who was the walk-on last year who won the job. And I think the day of the show, he blew out his knee and was lost for the year. And they were forced to start their backup. I can't remember the kid's name now. But, boy, did that work out. Tanner Morgan, I think his name is. Did that work out for Minnesota? Because, he filled in a little bit last year and was pretty good. And he looks good this year. They have a good running attack. So I think that game's going to be really close. I see it being a three-point game either way, something like that. I hope Minnesota pulls it out. I kind of think Penn State's going to win just because they have the experience. But good job out of Minnesota locking up PJ Fleck on a long-term deal, because he was definitely going to, get some offers out there if they hadn't done that. And of course, you know, LSU-Alabama, call me crazy, but I actually think LSU can win this game. I think it's a different LSU team than in years past, where – you know, it seems like every other year it's LSU, Alabama, and both are in the top 5 playing each other. And In the past, you know, LSU has always had that quarterback problem where they, you know, they didn't know how to really base an offense around the quarterback skill set that they had. So, you know, they would just ground and pound. And when you do that against Alabama, they'll eat you alive with their front seven and force you to throw the ball. And LSU couldn't throw the ball in the past. And I think Joe Burrow is a different type of animal this year. Yeah, he's looked like the real deal. And on the flip side, Tua, you know, it probably isn't going to be 100%. Like you said, Dave, they have their receivers to make up for it. I mean, their receivers are all world. But LSU has a decent secondary. And, you know, I hate to sound like an ESPN, you know, analyst or, you know, one of those, you know, dopey guys off the street. But, you know, it really probably does come down to LSU getting pressure on the quarterback, because if Tua has time to sit back there and throw, you know, and doesn't have to move around on that bad ankle, you know, football's football. You know, you give the quarterback time to throw, the receivers time to run their routes, and they're going to get separation and you can pick them apart. So the key to the game is going to be LSU getting pressure. And I know that their leading sacker, Michael Divinity, he just took a leave of absence from the team for personal reasons. So, you know, that's something to bear watching in the game. But I'm not sure who's going to win. I'd like to see LSU win. But again, I think it'll be close. And I think that's all we can ask for as college football fans to give us a reason to watch the game. And, you know, hopefully LSU wins, but it wouldn't shock me to see Alabama pull away and beat them.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with you. I think this is the best shot that LSU's had to beat Bama in a while, but at the same time, I think I could see this going either way. So let's go to John and let's get your thoughts on this week's action.
Yeah, I already talked about the Minnesota game, so nothing else to be said there. But yeah, Bama-LSU, it's going to be quite different from when these two played in like the game of the century, whatever, you know, I believe it was 2011, 2012, and it was like 9-3 or something crazy like that. I mean, there's going to be some points put up on the board in this one, but I feel like Saban, he's not going to want to get into like a, I wouldn't say get into a shootout, but like they're not going to be throwing the ball all over the field. I feel like Saban, now LSU wants to do that, but I feel like Saban is going to want to run the ball a little bit more. And maybe try to keep LSU off the field, because I think he knows that they probably can't stop Joe Burrow in that passing game this year. So maybe a little more of the running game from Alabama. So it should be a great game. I would definitely lean LSU with the points. I think this could be the year that they finally beat Alabama. I mean, we've said it many years since then. I can't remember the last time, actually, that LSU has beaten Alabama. I'd have to go look, but seems like every year since that game of the century year, and then when they played in the national championship, it was, oh, LSU can beat them this year. LSU can beat them this year, and it just kind of failed miserably. But it feels like this new era with this prolific passing game really can give Alabama some trouble. And I would take LSU with the points. I'm not going to call for the upset, you know, outright, but I definitely think it'll be close, and certainly would not shock me at all. And you know, LSU's played the tougher schedule. I mean, they played Florida and Auburn and Texas. Alabama is their best win. Texas A&M maybe. Other than that, I mean, they really haven't played anybody. So certainly will be their first like real test. And I guess it kind of all points to LSU with the points. But you know, you never count out Saban in these games. I mean, Saban versus Orgeron is a pretty big mismatch. I think we would all agree there. So it should be a great game. And you know, CBS has it in the 3:30 window. For us to enjoy on Saturday, which kind of leaves you with an ugly Saturday night, but hey, that's all right. You know, I think the great primetime game on ABC is Clemson and NC State. Mm-hmm. That's just really ugly. And Fox, I don't think has a game. Oh no, Fox is Iowa State, Oklahoma. All right, that's not terrible. That should be a somewhat competitive game. I guess we'll all end up watching that one. But yeah, so. As for some other games, I mean, there's really not much else besides those two. I mean, you do have, I mean, who would have thought Iowa and Wisconsin's another ranked versus ranked matchup? But I don't think anyone's talking about that one because it It's probably going to end like 13-10, whoever wins that game. That's just going to be ugly. No one's talking about that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much it. Dave, you have your USC team traveling to Herm Edwards' house after they have a bye. Don't know what to make of that game.
Well,
I guess I would say Arizona State. If I had to pick it, I would probably say Arizona State off a bye. But well, I guess one last thing, due to the bowl agreements, so we're going to assume Clemson makes the college football playoff. I think we can all agree on that, and they just have no competition this year in the ACC. So the Orange Bowl has to take an ACC team. They're under contract to take an ACC team. So they're going to take some pile of shit that's probably not even ranked in the top 25 to be in the Orange Bowl. So, like, you know, maybe Virginia or Virginia Tech or maybe even Wake Forest. I think they're the only other ranked ACC team at the moment. So that's just a complete joke. Remember when people bitched and screamed like so many years ago about UConn making the BCS because they won the Big East and they legitimately won it? And now they're just going to take some, just because it's contractually obligated, they're going to take some ACC team that doesn't belong in one of those big games, and no one's going to say anything, which is a joke. So that's my rant for the week.
You know, the ACC's having a really down year. Oh, go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, and, you know, I actually was thinking about that a couple weeks ago. I was reading some, like, dopey bowl projection thing and saw, like, you know, like Virginia penciled in for the Orange Bowl right after they got beat by Miami, I think. And I was, you know, so I read up on it. And, you know, John's right, but if an ACC team isn't in the top 25 of the final CFB ranking, then it could go to the committee to vote for a basically a wild card to replace an ACC contender, which, you know, makes sense and would give us a good, you know, possibly a good matchup in the Orange Bowl with probably another SEC team or something like that. But, you know, for sure that they're going to end up putting like a 3-loss Wake Forest team at like number 25, just so that they get in there. And we're going to be looking at a Wake Forest and Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl, and just a shitty game. But yeah, I, you know, I'm in the same boat as John. I saw that and couldn't believe that they actually contractually agreed to let an ACC team, almost mandatory that they play in that game. It's such a farce.
It is. I mean, it's, as I was just going to say, it's as down as I've ever seen it. I mean, that is just, especially that coastal division, it's just brutal. So let's go to Andy and get your thoughts at the week ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, you guys basically did it all. That is news to me regarding that Orange Bowl ACC tie-in. I mean, I knew there's always sorts of like allegiances and affiliations, but I always thought there's a way to like circumvent that, and nothing's always like 100% binding, but in this case it sounds like it is, and that's just gonna create more resentment from some of these Pac-12 mouth breathers that, you know, they cringe when they see an 8-4 team in a big bowl. Like, so who's that? Like, wait, we're going to watch Wake Forest? This is what we're going to do now? Like, Wake Forest versus, like, Baylor? Jeez. Well, I guess we'll find out. There's a lot of stuff that can happen. But, yeah, Alabama, LSU, you know, it's – Tua is definitely going to be compromised, and Saban's definitely he's not showing his hand, and, you know, game day decision, and I do agree with John's angle that, you know, they might just try to play keep away from Joe Burrow and try to control, you know, the pigskin time of possession. Also agree with the whole, you know, mismatch from a coaching X's and O's standpoint. But, you know, LSU's got that very prolific offense this year, different than all the other years, going back to the Les Miles days. One thing that would worry you if you're LSU, you know, even if it's a Gimpy Tua or Mac Jones with extra week of playing with the first team, is they can be scored upon. Remember the Florida game last month? You know, Florida was hanging around, and I know they backdoor covered, but they were able to score a bunch of points and keep up with the LSU offense for the majority of that game, and that Saturday night in Baton Rouge. So you know, it could be a high scoring game. It probably will be a high scoring game. One of those, you know, 3.5 hour affairs. Gary Danielson was explaining why that game, this game is a 12 or, you know, a 3:30 game and not a night game. I mean, CBS only could pick one night game, and they picked Notre Dame, Georgia. And, you know, that was from like week two or week three. So, you know, that's who they picked. So that's just how the cookie crumbled. Personally, I don't really care what time the game's on. You know, 12:30, 3:30 doesn't really matter to me. That Iowa-Wisconsin game, you know, that could be playing like inside my eardrum. I wouldn't listen to one snap. That's just unwatchable. I love you guys were singing, John and Ron were singing Row, Row, Row the Boat with PJ Fleck, you know, years ago before everyone started hearing about the ways of Row, Row, Row the Boat when he was coaching Western Michigan. So, didn't they go to like a pretty big bowl? Like,
they did.
But he had already bolted.
I think they won too, right?
Oh, you guys have better memory than me.
Who did they play?
Anyone?
I thought they played. Didn't they play like Auburn or something? And
They played. They played Wisconsin. And they lost though. It was a close game.
Oh, they lost. Okay, sorry. Whoops.
Gotcha. Yeah, that was. Yeah, he.
Did we lose Andy? Well, I was just going to say that I think UCF was the one that beat Auburn, but kind of a similar idea. But anyway, did we lose Andy? Andy, you with us? Oh, here he comes. There we go. All right, hello, Andy. You back with us?
Yeah, I don't know what happened with the drop the call somehow. But yeah, anyway, yeah, Al will be. I can't stand James Franklin. I think he's like a phony, scantimonious piece of crap. And he kind of looks like Mark Mungo. So I will be rooting very hard against Penn State. This is like, you know, PJ Fleck, this is as high as his like cachet is going to get, right, at this point. Like, he is his stock is very high. And so, you know, regardless of how Minnesota has done it in the beginning of the year, you know, what do you want to call it, smoke and mirrors, or winning by the hair of their chinny-chin-chin early on? Like, it doesn't really matter now. Like, they're undefeated, and they're hosting Penn State. And, you know, cards on the table time. Let's see what they got. And, yeah, I will definitely be taking Minnesota as underdogs. And, yeah, Dave, you mentioned the Baylor-TCU game. You know, Baylor, they're 8-0 as well. That coach is another talent. You know, they're not as prolific as they were in the Art Briles years. Last week they only scored 17, but if you actually watch that game, they were turning the ball over left and right. Like, and West Virginia scored on like a kickoff return and like a third, you know, 80-yard pass play. So that game was closer than it really should have been. But you know, TCU, they've got a. I don't know much about TCU this year. They did beat Texas. That's definitely like a purist kind of game, but I'd be into that. It's gonna be a fun Saturday. You know, John mentioned the Iowa State Oklahoma game. You know, I think everyone on this program might have expected a little more out of Iowa State this year. They already have 3 losses. I mean, they've all been close losses. That's the funny thing about them. Like, they've all been like really, really like that Iowa game. They should have won, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, so that'll be an interesting game, in my opinion. I might be completely wrong. I always feel like Iowa State and Oklahoma kind of play close games, but I don't. You know, you guys can funhouse me. I don't have the historical records in front of me, so I might just be completely misremembering. And then another game that would probably be interested is Wyoming-Boise State. I just John and Ron could probably diagram it better. Like, this group of 5 team, like, we can all agree, like, we don't want Boise State involved, like, anyone but Boise State. So Boise State needs to stub their toe between now and early December, and then we could be safe and sound and hopefully get like a team from the AAC firmly in that group of five bowl game.
Well, I'm with you on that one. So good stuff, everybody. And we continue. Let's go to the NFL. 11 out of 14 teams in the NFL won on over the weekend. And all 11 of those home teams covered the spread, too. So that was a really big weekend for the home teams in a year where home teams had been actually not doing very well against the spread overall. VSiN, if you follow them, at VSiN on Twitter, has a complete breakdown of who's winning between underdogs and favorites and home teams and road teams. And the road teams are having a huge advantage. But they predict that the home teams will have a bit of a comeback here in the second part of the season. So with that in mind, let's go to Ron in New Jersey and get your recap of the NFL action from week number 9.
Yeah, it was a pretty good week. The first game that jumps out to me is the Seahawks and the Buccaneers, which was a really entertaining game. Give Bruce Arians credit. Jameis Winston is still, Jameis Winston still makes a ton of mistakes, but Bruce Arians isn't afraid to keep making him throw the ball down the field, and it makes it an entertaining brand of football. And what can you say about Russell Wilson this year? He's magic, and Tyler Lockett has been magic too. And they hooked up time and time again in the game. Tampa Bay tied it late. Seattle had a chance to win, missed the field goal, went to overtime and won on the Tyler Lockett touchdown. That was a really good game, a really good shootout. The Sunday night game, New England and Baltimore, I'll go to my grave saying that, I don't trust Baltimore in a playoff spot against New England. But, on the Sunday night game, Lamar Jackson, got it rolling. He looked good. Tom Brady didn't have his best game. I was waiting patiently to see the story start rolling in, or Andy linked to the stories that started rolling in about Tom Brady. Is Tom Brady done, just because they lost the game? And to an extent, I think you saw some of that on ESPN the next day. That's just a fucking joke. But the Ravens did their job and won that game. One of the games were there that were interesting. The Packers getting essentially blown out on the road against the Chargers was surprising to me, because Phillip Rivers hasn't looked like Phillip Rivers this year. And their offense has been sputtering since they bought Melvin Gordon back. But the defense was all over Aaron Rodgers, and he had no time to throw. So that was an interesting game. Brought the Packers back down to earth a little bit, but I think they'll be fine. The Dolphins get their first win of the year against the Jets. The less said, the better on that. And the Monday night game was, for a quarter and a half, was Giant fans thumping their chest saying, Danny Dimes was the real deal, and, watch out for us. And, they got a punch in the face pretty quickly, and the Cowboys rolled over them and, brought them back down there, setting up a great matchup this week between the Jets and the Giants, which is just horrendous. But yeah, so that's my recap of the week, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later.
Yep. I would say that the highlight of that Monday Night Football game with the Giants was the black cat running out on the field for like 5 minutes. That was captivating television. All right, let's go to John and let's get your recap.
Yeah, try to find something as funny as Booger McFarland thought that was that cat on the field. I mean, I think he laughed for a good 10 minutes straight with that cat. I mean, my God. Like, okay, it was funny for the first minute or two. I don't know. He's just a disaster. But regardless, yeah, it was an interesting weekend. Packers just did not show up. It was kind of a trap game coming in. I mean, after the huge win against Kansas City in prime time, I mean, they were just talking, Devontae Adams was coming back. It was just all too much, like, positivity, I guess you could say. And they kind of got brought down back to earth a little bit. Even Aaron Rodgers was after the game was like, yeah, we needed a slice of humble pie. So I would be concerned if they lay another egg at home on Sunday against Carolina, but I just chalk it up as just a bad game and the Chargers were ready to play and the Packers weren't. So we'll just, you know, they just burn the tape and move on. But, you know, so not that much you can do with that one. Yeah, the Sunday night game was interesting. I did take the Ravens with one of our picks here last week. It was just like the perfect spot for Baltimore coming off the bye against the Patriots, who, you know, they can only play what was on their schedule, but they really hadn't played a playoff quality team yet this year. And I guess we want to call the Bills playoff quality, sure, but the Ravens were like the first really quality opponent they played, and you know, it was just a good spot for the Patriots to take their first loss. Does not diminish the kind of team that they are. Same thing like Green Bay. I mean, no team was going to go undefeated this year, so it was a good spot for them to take a loss, and they'll move on. And I agree. In the playoffs, you know that Belichick would, especially at home in Foxborough, would scheme up a way to stop Jackson in that running attack. But it was just a good spot for the Ravens, and I guess too much emotion in that stadium. And you know, coming off a bye week, that was a good win for them. And the Seahawks Bucks game was crazy. In terms of the spread purposes, having Bucks plus six, I was really pissed off that the Seahawks didn't make the field goal at the end of the game, and then they go into overtime and obviously get the touchdown. Good and then kick the extra point in overtime. I was able to scratch a push out of that, but that was kind of disappointing. Let's see. Yeah, the Steelers-Colts game was interesting. Vinatieri hooks the field goal at the end of the game to end up losing. Brian Hoyer comes in for Brissett and throws three touchdowns. But the Steelers, you know, give them credit after their rough start. They get back to 4-4 and somehow in the mix for a wild card in the AFC. The Vikings with a pretty bad loss in Kansas City. I just don't understand sometimes their play calling. Like, KC has one of the worst run defenses in the league, and they really didn't utilize Dalvin Cook that much. And you know, Cousins, after they're talking, oh, this is a new man, Kirk Cousins, and of course they can't, you know, it's a game that they should have won. And really, with Green Bay losing, they lost ground because they couldn't make up and get the win. And now it looks like a huge win for the Chiefs because now Mahomes is probably going to come back and they can get back on track for their season. Yeah, really nothing much else to mention. I'll let Andy dive into the frauds that are the Cleveland Browns. He even wants to talk about them. And he wastes any airtime talking about them, but yeah, they're a joke. So yeah, it was an interesting weekend.
Yep. Let's go to Andy for the recap.
Yeah, I mean, I first mentioned, if anyone even remembers that 49ers-Cardinals game from last week. The Cardinals cover, but I mean Cliff Kingsbury, him and Freddie Kitchens are just like they're made for each other. Just these two coaches that Barstool probably loves, and they're just like they're just way over their heads. Like Kingsbury on that timeout, like when they had the 49ers stuffed right before halftime, and then what does San Francisco do right after the timeout? They score. And then at the end of the game, he just doesn't. Someone get him a clock. Someone just no timeout, no awareness of timeout management. And yeah, I mean Murray's fun to watch. I mean the team isn't they're not a complete disaster, but and this was a perfect example. Like you know Murray is like a backdoor bonanza. Like. He's going to scare these teams that are big favorites, and that's basically what happened. But Kingsbury, I don't know. John mentioned or someone mentioned, like, last year where that he had, like, he was going to have his players, like, in the middle of practice, like, stop practicing so they can go on their phones and, like, go on Instagram. I'm like, okay, like, this is how we're going to do stuff. All right. I don't know if that's going to work in the NFL, but I guess we'll see what happens. But, yeah, it was an entertaining week. The Seahawks-Tampa game, I actually thought Arians might have gone for two when they tied it at the end of the game because, you know, they're 2-5. They're not really going anywhere in the NFC South, but he played more conventional. And then what happened in overtime, they – you know, Russell Wilson doing Russell Wilson things. I will say that that Seahawks defense has a little has a lot to be desired. Clowney was non-existent. That secondary was getting burnt left and right. Winston had a great game. He made one little boo-boo on that, like, empty-handed throw fumble. But, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that Monday night game down in San Francisco. That'll be a good game. We'll probably talk about that later from a pick standpoint. Yeah, the Chiefs winning without Mahomes, you know, that's just kind of like quintessential Kirk Cousins, Minnesota, Zimmer. Like, every time you think that the Vikings are, you know, going in gear, they do something like this. And, you know, you can never really fully trust Kirk Cousins, in my opinion. And, you know, that's going to be an entertaining division race from here on out. I had a weird feeling about the Chargers, so congratulations, Yachts. But like John said, Green Bay will be fine. The Bears, I mean, I think the Mitchell Trubisky bandwagon, it's got to be broken down at this point and put out to pasture. I mean, they stink. The Bears never, ever have a quarterback. That's just their culture. The Lions, Raiders, that was actually an entertaining game. The Browns, no comment. We'll stick to Twitter for that. Patriots, yeah, they didn't look their best. They probably could have gotten blown out if Jones doesn't muff that punt when the Ravens are getting the ball back up 17-0 and they muff the punt, basically give the Patriots a new life to get in get back in that game. But then, you know, everything what goes around comes around. Edelman doesn't really fumble, doesn't really hold the ball like a loaf of bread that often, but he did. And that was, you know, I don't know if it was you can't assume they're going to score a touchdown, but it was definitely at least a 10-point swing because they were, you know, well in the red zone when Edelman fumbled in the third quarter. So Jackson was a total beast in that game. The running game was on all cylinders, so good for Baltimore. They definitely had a great game plan. In the second half, I think they had an 8-minute drive and then a 7-minute drive. And in the first quarter, they controlled the time of possession as well. So good recipe to beat New England in that spot. Patriots have a bye. So Belichick will definitely probably have them working hard and getting ready for the Eagles next week. So, you know, long season. I don't think even the biggest Pollyanna New England fan was expecting 16-0. No one goes 16-0 anymore, so. We'll see what happens. And yeah, that Giant game against the Cowboys. Like, I don't know if you guys remember the touchdown pass by Prescott to Cooper. Like, you watch that. Like, you don't see NFL plays like go for touchdowns in that spot. Like, that's the type of play that you see, like Oklahoma scoring against, you know, Texas Tech. Like, that was just. Like the Giants defense, you know, is just a total disgrace. So yeah, like if you were worried about the Giants or the Dallas screwing up their money line parlay, like you really don't have to worry for about like a quarter and a half because the Giants are a disgrace. So back after this.
Back after this, I love that. All right, so let's go to the picks and we get it going for week number 10, and let's start with Ron in New Jersey.
All right, thanks, Dave. First pick, I'm going with the Monday night game that Andy was talking about. I'm going to take the Seahawks +6 on the road against the 49ers. 49ers is definitely the real deal. They've looked good. 6 is just a big line, especially when, Russell Wilson, let's be fair, is probably the MVP of the league right now. You know, like Andy said, Seattle defense leaves a lot to be desired. And Jimmy G has certainly been hot recently. So, you know, I think there'll be a lot of points scored in that one. But I do think Seattle can win it outright. And I think they will cover the 6, even if they don't win it outright. So that's my first pick. My second pick, I looked all over and nothing jumped out at me. And trust me, I don't want to make this pick. And, you know, I wanted to stay as far away from this game as possible, but I'm taking the Giants -2.5, against the Jets. And I know the Jets are the home team, but let's be fair. I mean, they play in the same fucking building, so that's just, you know, stupid as it is. And, you know, knowing the Giants and the LTs of the world, they're going to be buying up the tickets on the secondary market. And, you know, it'll look like a Giants home game. But it's the two worst coaches in the NFL facing off against each other. And, no disrespect to Freddie Kitchens, and, you know, probably in the next year or two, we'll be saying the same thing like Andy said about Cliff Kingsbury, but Pat Shurmur, and I watch the Giant games. The guy calls a challenge, throws a challenge flag every week on a pass interference, even though the numbers say that it's not going to ever get overturned. He keeps trying. God help him. He keeps trying every week. And it's usually right when his team is you know, driving down the field or has some momentum, he'll make sure he'll throw a challenge flag and stop him dead in the tracks. I mean, he's just an awful head coach. He was an awful head coach in Minnesota. He's an awful head coach with the Giants. But on the flip side, you have Adam Gase, who might be the worst coach in football history. His team totally quit on him. You know, they're playing out the string now. You could tell in the game against Miami. I mean, the guys just, they're not even really trying. I mean, they're down to, practice squad guys on the offensive line, practice squad guys in the secondary. And I mean, Adam Gase might be the worst football coach I've ever seen. Midway through the third quarter, he gave up on the game, and you know, footage of him sitting by himself on the sideline with nobody around him. And just unbelievable stuff. Two of the worst teams in the NFL meeting. And, you know, because of the geographical nature of it, you have people in these parts giving more credence to it than they should. It's just an awful, awful game with two awful teams and two awful coaches. But, if the Jets played Liberty this week or UConn or Rutgers, I would take all three of those teams to cover the spread or win outright against the Jets. So, give me the Giants -2.5. I just think the Jets have quit on the season, and God help anybody who has to watch that game.
All right, thank you for the pick, Saran. I wonder where I would put Maryland handicapping them against the Jets. I'll figure that one out later. Okay, John, let's go to you for the NFL picks.
Yeah, that's gonna be quite the shit show. That's gonna be a fun game, I guess, from a outsider's perspective, just for the mongo-ness that's sure to come. But yeah, this is a tough week for me. I could really not find anything I really like. So we do this contest when we do 7 picks. I have no idea what I'm gonna do with that. But for 2, I guess we'll try here. So I'll start with, I'm gonna take the Dolphins getting 10 points against the Colts. I know maybe there's kind of a little bit of a letdown factor maybe after getting their first win, but even leading up to the win last week, the Dolphins have been playing hard. I mean, that's one thing you can say. They have not quit on Brian Flores, and I think, you know, Fitzpatrick, he is what he is at this point. He's going to make some bad, so he's going to make some great plays, and he's going to make some boneheaded plays. And if you get more of the great plays than the boneheaded plays, they can be competitive. And I just think that's just too many points. Brian Hoyer might be your starting quarterback. I know they haven't ruled Brissett out, but I think for the sake of the long-term season, I think they can probably win this game with Hoyer. But I was looking at the box scores. Like, every single Colts game comes down to the last possession this year, within one score. So I don't think Miami will win this game straight up, but I definitely think they can keep this, you know, to like a touchdown, like, I don't know, 24-17 or something like that. So give me the Dolphins plus 10 for the first game. And then game two, we'll just fade Kirk Cousins in prime time. That seems to be a good angle. So we'll go Dallas minus 3. I kind of don't like the fact that Minnesota lost last week because you kind of always, it's like a buy low, sell high scenario. I would rather like to fade them in the spot coming off a win. But still, you just can't trust them on the road in prime time. And I think Dallas will be able to, I think Prescott and Cooper and Gallup will have a big game. Minnesota usually does a good job stopping the run, but I think they can be pretty effective through the air. And, you know, you never trust Cousins in this kind of game. So Dallas minus 3 and Miami plus 10 are the week 10 picks.
Okay, thank you very much, John. Let's now go to Andy for his week number 10, the NFL picks.
Thanks, Dave. Oh, so Virginia is beating Syracuse 46-30 with 4 minutes left in the second half. That's classic 30 points.
Oh,
yeah, I can't take conference games on November 6th. It's a little tough to take out of the ACC. But anyway, Dave, I'm going to take go checker on checker with Ron for game number one. I'm also going to take the Seahawks getting 6 at San Francisco. And Shanahan does laps around Pete Carroll. I'm not going to deny that. But this is just a situation where even if San Francisco is up in the fourth quarter, I think the backdoor potential is too good of an opportunity to pass up. So I'm going to take Seattle just going with the mindset that they can keep it close. You know, Wilson magic is at an all-time high right now. Maybe Carson breaks a big run or two. And Monday night, anything can happen. You know, San Francisco is the talk of the town right now, talk of the league potentially. You know, their schedule gets pretty hard. You know, they got Green Bay, and they got the Rams, they got the Ravens, and the Seahawks twice. So things will get a little interesting in that NFC West. So give me Seattle for game number one, getting the 6. And then game number two, I'm going to live dangerously. I'm going to take the Bills on the road, getting 3 at the Browns. Right now, the Browns should be favored over anybody at this point. So, yeah, when you take the Bills, are you all right? You know, what's going on? You need an exam? Like, what are you doing taking Josh Allen on the road? But here we are. Their defense is good. That running back that they have, forget his last name, but he's kind of shifty. I forget the guy's name, and I have him on a fantasy team. But,
Marlon Mack? Is that
he's
that?
Okay.
No,
that's the Colts. That's Singletary. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's pretty good. He's formidable. And in this spot, all we're asking is for, you know, Josh Allen, like, don't ruin the game. Like, you can only lose the game by being a clown. Just manage the game properly. So, you know, Cleveland is going to do everything in their willpower to gag it up with, you know, floppy turnovers and penalties and self inflicting mistakes. So all you got to do is just focus and get the job done. And don't look ahead, because, you know, it's conceivable that the Bills could be 7-2 going into that Thanksgiving game against Dallas, which is just completely mind blowing. But first things first, take care of business against Cleveland, and then we'll worry about the next game. But we're going with the Bills, game number two, getting 3 against the Browns to pair up with Seahawks getting 6 against the San Francisco 49ers.
All right, thanks, Andy. Good luck to the picks, everybody. And as we mentioned before, Robert and Virginia's picks will be on DitCow.com by Thursday evening as you listen to this program. So we'll finish with my picks for week number 10 in the NFL. Let's do it. Okay. I agree with everybody else. This is a tough week to pick games. I mean, all these spreads are really, really sneaky. So game number one is going to be just just like, I mean, I don't love it, but we're going to go with the Saints giving 13 against the Falcons. And I think that Matt Ryan might even play in this game. I think the indications are he will play, but still, and that team is awful. So we're going to go with the Saints giving 13. And again, I don't love this pick at all. I think there's equally as good a chance that this ends up being like a one-score game in the fourth quarter. I don't know. It's just that kind of week. It's just really hard to tell. Okay, so game number two. I'm going to go checker and a checker with John. I'm taking the Vikings. And the thing of it is, you know, the argument against Kirk Cousins is very, very sound, absolutely. But I could present just as equally as good an argument against Dak Prescott, who just continues to not impress me. I mean, you guys broke that down. I mean, that play that they scored on was a college play. And it's like, this is not going to happen against the Vikings defense. It's just not. I just think the thing I've always noticed about the Cowboys in recent years is that they tend to play a little more flat at home. Now, the trends are actually saying that the Cowboys are going to end up doing really well in this game. So this is more of an instinct play on my part. But I'll take the value on the road, and even though I don't love the pick, I'm going to go with the Vikings plus 3. To go along with the Saints, minus 13, week number 10. All right, so that's it for us tonight. Let's go final thoughts, and to start, we'll go with Ron in New Jersey.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Saturday, big-time college football weekend, November. We're into the meat of November. We'll blink and it'll be Christmas time and football will be winding up. So we got to enjoy it while we can. And you definitely got a couple games this weekend that you could sink your teeth into. And I look forward to it.
Yeah, I don't think I gave the Chargers-Raiders game enough, too. That's going to be a good one. I am looking forward to that game. From the standpoint that, you know, it's kind of crazy. It's like, I think the Raiders actually have a chance to make the playoffs. I hope that they can take care of business here. That's going to be interesting. Rams Pittsburgh.
The AFC is such a shit show, Dave, that anybody can realistically come out of there, and the Raiders have a good shot as anybody else.
That's so true. It's very true. It's just all over the place. It's a real train wreck. Okay, let's go to John. Final thoughts.
Yeah, before you know it, we'll be blazing bowls in about a month, so we'll have to enjoy this last month of the college season. Should be a great Saturday, and as always, the NFL gives us some twists and turns with the witching hour on Sunday, so should be a fun weekend, and hopefully everyone does well with their picks.
Well, thanks for that, John. Let's go to Andy. Final thoughts.
Yeah, thanks. We talked about it when we did the first program, how fast the season goes, and we're now at the last third of the college football season of November. Tomorrow, you walk into Starbucks, it's going to be Christmas. That's a true story. The Red Cups make their season debut tomorrow. So get ready for, like, someone on the board or on the Twitter is going to be mad because it's not red enough or it's not green enough or it's not – something's going to be wrong with the Cups. Just you watch. And then, looking forward to the full slate. The 10 a.m. or the early games, 10 a.m. out here, 1 p.m. for the East Coast folks, are so blah because it's like a good team versus a bad team. Like Nance and Romo are doing Chiefs at Titans. So they had Slim Pick in CBS this week because the big game is Green Bay, Carolina at the 4 o'clock game. And you have, some other big teams on bye. So, yeah, the early slate's a little lackluster. That's probably why it was challenging for all of us to pick some games, just because of the matchups, the Jets, Giants. It's just hard to pick some of these games. So good luck, and we'll look forward to it.
Yeah, all right. I mirror the same points, and good luck to everybody on the picks. Should be a fun weekend. And certainly in college it's going to be fun as well. So good night for now, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your week, and good luck. We'll talk to you soon.
All right,
fellas.
See ya.
All right, fellas. I think I covered everybody, right? Yeah. All right. So let's say goodnight. Thank you very much, everybody. Hope you all of your picks go well as well. Should be a good time. I'm Dave Medina. We hope you've enjoyed the program. You can follow us on Twitter at DidCow. We're on the web at DidCow.com, where we will have the picks, including Robert and Virginia's picks, by Thursday evening. And you can follow us on Apple Podcasts, Dave in the City Out West. Hope you give us a nice review, hopefully 5 stars. Until then, we'll see you next time.